Obviously, we didn't win the game, but often is the case in the preseason. There were some positives, some negatives, some things to build upon moving forward. We'll do that. We'll look at the tape with an effort to get better.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Steelers.com Live, presented by Xbox One. Xbox One bringing fantasy football to life. I'm Missy Matthews, joined by Bob Labriola and Mike Prosciutto. And guys, we have an actual football game to talk about today.
Yeah, and as you can notice, we're inside here. You know, that the pretty scenic view.
Right, yeah.
Clear skies and all that. Not so much here on the campus of St. Vincent College today. Lots of rain, lots of wind. Beautiful November day here in Latrobe, wouldn't you say?
Well, I think the day was much like the game on Saturday night. There was some good, there was some bad, there's much to build on. We'll move forward.
We will have Coach Tomlin's press conference coming to you live whenever practice does wrap up. Ironically enough, though, you were saying about it rained pretty much all day, but then as soon as practice started, it kind of cleared up. So, yeah, but we're inside, and that's okay.
Let's say the rain stopped.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it. It's not a postcard day out there.
No, not by any means. It's football weather-ish.
Right.
Like we're coming to you from Studio A in Benedict Hall.
In Benedict Hall, yes.
All right, well, let's talk about the New York Football Giants and Pittsburgh Steelers, their preseason opener on Saturday, guys. And some good and some bad, as you were saying, Mike, as we can get to a little bit more in detail. But we finally saw a football game.
Yeah, and I think what you saw was the Steelers coming out defensively in particularly a strong start. Offensively, a decent start. Didn't get it in the end zone, but got it down inside the red zone and kicked the field goal. And then things kind of degenerated. Another big play marring the defensive effort. But Labs, a lot of young guys showing up, both good and bad, but showing up. And I think maybe starting to reveal either what the Steelers are counting upon from them or maybe what they're hoping for from them, considering there might be some improvement between now and September the 7th.
Yeah, you know, here we're looking at the long run. And, you know, last year the Steelers gave up 17 plays of 40 or more yards. And, you know, that has been an emphasis, I thought, really from the day that the regular season ended. You know, a lot of the offseason moves on defense were made in an effort to kind of curtail that. We've been hearing players and coaches talk about that endlessly. You know, the first series that the defense is on the field, it was a pretty nice series by the defense. And then, as you mentioned, Mike, the offense went down and scored, kicked a field goal 3-0. And a lot of times in these preseason games, you know, the Giants had a game under their belt. The Steelers did not. And the team that has played, even though it's just a preseason game, usually has the advantage in terms of, you know, tempo and pace and speed of the game and those kind of things. So I was kind of heartened early by what we saw, but then that long run just kind of really put me in a bad mood.
I think it put everybody in a bad mood. 73 yards, and you could just tell the coaches on the sidelines. It was kind of not a relaxed atmosphere, but like you said, the Steelers were leading, and then coaches started chewing players out, and players were getting mad at themselves, especially a guy like Cam Hayward.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you have to be in your gap, which Cam Hayward said he was not. And then, okay, so the guy's not in his gap, and so maybe that's a, as Mike Tomlin said, a 10, 12-yard run, whatever. The defensive backs could not get him on the ground. And, you know, if you really want to boil this down, and I'm going to make a little bit of a stretch here, you know, the Dree Archer 46-yard catch and run, Prince Amukamara took the proper angle and gave ground sufficiently, though, until he could get Dree Archer out of bounds at, I think, the 14-yard line. The Steelers kick a field goal. The Steelers' safeties did not get a hand on Rashad Jennings, and that's a touchdown. And the final score was 20-16. So, you know, the game, if this were a regular season game and it ended as it did, we would be saying the game came down to one secondary being able to get a guy who was running free on the ground or out of bounds. The other secondary could not. And that's the difference. That would have been a loss. And if you finish 8-8 and you're one game out of the playoffs, there you go.
And the guy that the Giants got on the ground, is probably faster than the guy that the Steelers couldn't get on the ground. And, yeah, Cam Hayward was pretty upfront that he got blown out of his gap. But a couple other disturbing things happened. Number one, Lawrence Timmons said, no, it's my fault. I didn't jump in the A-gap as the middle linebacker in what was a nickel formation. He tried to, and there was a blatant hold on the Giants' right guard who pulled around to fill that hole. You see it right there. Timmons almost tackled. All right, that didn't get called. That's going to happen too. But, Labs, as you alluded and Mike Tomlin alluded, it's got to be stopped at some point. Give up a first down. Give up 15. Give up 20. But two safeties unblocked on this play, and I think Will Allen got a hand on him right there. I'm not 100% sure, but it was basically an untouched jaunt into the end zone. And the stats we keep talking about, Lab brought them up already. I'll bring them up again. 11 plays of 51 or more yards and 17 of 40 or more yards. That defined the season, basically, last year in a negative way.
Yeah, and what I noticed last year about the way that teams were attacking the Steelers' defense, you know, they would use personnel groupings to dictate or get the Steelers into their nickel and then run the ball. And that is exactly what the Giants did. They got the Steelers into their nickel based on the personnel grouping, and then they ran the ball. There was no nose tackle on the field for that play, and they ran it right up the middle. I don't know enough football to sit here and say, you know, what the alignment should have been or who should have been where or whatever, but it seems to me that this is happening often enough that it's not just something that it's an occasional thing. I think that opponents now are doing it on purpose, dictating that the Steelers into their nickel with personnel groupings and then running the ball.
Well, I think as soon as that play happened, everybody flashed back to the Oakland game from last season.
Yeah, I mean, there was the Oakland game last season. There was the game against the Vikings in London last season. You know, you're not supposed to see runs that long in the NFL. I mean, that, you know, you see that in high school and college sometimes, but with the speed on an NFL football field, a speed that throughout a defensive unit, or at least the speed that it's supposed to have, you shouldn't have these kinds of things. And, you know, the Steelers gave up, you know, again, the numbers, whether it's 11 of 50 or more, 17 of 40 or more, but when they're running the ball like this, I mean, long runs with guys, again, who are not that fast. I mean, Terrell Pryor is not a speed demon, neither is Adrian Peterson in terms of just running away from people. That should not happen. It shouldn't happen last year. And you would think that since it did happen last year, it would be an emphasis, whatever. I don't know. I hope it's not the start of another trend.
Well, as we had already touched on, Cam Hayward did take full responsibility. So here's a little bit more of what Cam had to say after the game.
We beat ourselves. You know, I'm fully responsible for one of the plays, breaking up the middle. Went too flat, but you know, I saw some good things from a lot of good guys. I thought when we didn't shoot ourselves in the foot, you know, we made some good strides, but we gotta get back in the drawing board.
We're talking about the 73-yard run.
Yeah.
What did you not get done there?
I didn't get it done. Just put it that way. You know, I put a lot of pressure on myself, and I messed up for this team, and you know, I gotta learn from this, and it won't happen again.
All right, guys, going from a negative to a positive, talking about the Steelers offense, specifically the first team with Ben Roethlisberger in there. We didn't see him that long, but what we did see was a lot of distribution among various guys on offense, Mike.
Yeah, and that carry right there by Le'Veon Bell to start the game, 9 yards. You guys might remember he had 4 carries for 9 yards last preseason, the whole thing combined. Le'Veon Bell matching that total with his first carry, 8 on the second carry. Then we see the big play here to Dre Archer, and then coming up, we're going to see LeGarrette Blount get the ball in the red zone. And Labs, correct my math if it's wrong, but that's 3 different running backs touching the football in the first 4 plays, and the ball was being matriculated down the field at a rather healthy rate.
Yeah, it was, and I liked, I really liked the pace and the tempo, you know, that the offense took the field with. And again, you know, you ran a couple through the. The quick slant pass to Dre Archer, big gain. LeGarrette Blount, 5 yards, and then you know, red zone efficiency. Once again, talking about things that were problems last year that you would hope, you know, would be fixed or improved upon. Now it's only one preseason game. And again, you know, often red zone efficiency is something that takes time to develop, and, you know, you need more repetitions and those kind of things. And I understand all of that. But, you know, when Mike Tomlin talked about situationally, how games are decided in situations, red zone, third down, goal to go, those kind of things, decide games in the NFL. And the Steelers, again, just one preseason game, their first preseason game, knocking the rust off, all of those things, okay, fine. But red zone efficiency was not good enough, 0 for 2. Third down conversions were not good enough. I think it was 18%. And that's how you lose games in the NFL.
Well, sticking with Dree and the first team offense, guys, did you see enough from Dree? I mean, that's one big splash play, but it is just the preseason.
It is just the preseason, but it was a big splash play. And, you know, he was the guy that, at least in my mind, I had identified as the one I wanted to see perform the most in a stadium with the lights on. We're expecting to see a lot more from Dree Archer on returns than we saw the other night. Didn't get anything going on punt returns and no opportunities on kickoff returns. But the challenge, I think, with Dree Archer is to find this guy a situation where he can do well. And that one right there, a wide receiver screen when they're playing off of him, when you can get him the ball in space. I actually thought he was going to score on this play. I think maybe he thought he was going to score on this play. I think maybe he scored on this play a lot at Kent State, and he maybe just figured out that in the NFL.
But look at 20. Look how number 20 was tracking him, and you can see at one point he turned and he was coming across flat, and then he turned and started going up the field more. That's how you. That's what the Steelers' defensive backs did not do with Rashad Jennings, and really, that's the difference in the game, I think. You know, the 4 points, field goal, their touchdown, that's how you lose games in this league.
One of the encouraging things about that play also was Marquise Pouncey getting downfield, David DeCastro getting downfield. I don't know if either one of them got a block that necessarily sprung it, but how long have we been talking about these young, mobile linemen? AC Pouncey on the left. There's DeCastro in the middle of the screen. Hey, he did cut behind DeCastro. These guys, big guys that can move, athletic linemen, and the effect that they may have with this short passing game, with getting the ball to the running backs and turning little plays into big plays, potential splash plays. There was a lot going on in this play that the Steelers ought to be pretty excited about.
Yeah, and, you know, the other thing is, you mentioned the having linemen who can get out and make blocks in space, and now it seems that, you know, you have some of the skill-type players who can take advantage of that, who you can use with those linemen to create big plays, create seams that you can take advantage of in the defense. And, you know, again, that's, I think, just the tip of the iceberg of what we're going to see from Dree Archer. I think that, you know, in this game, the other thing that he did that I kind of liked, he didn't do much on punt returns, but he fair caught the ball when it needed to be fair caught. There weren't punts either bouncing in front of him or behind him. There was none of that kind of sloppiness, let's say, with the punt return game. He caught everything cleanly. So, you know, to me, that was also a positive sign as well.
Yeah, I don't know that I put him on my fantasy team, Missy, but when he says I showed that I can play in the NFL, I'm starting to buy that.
Pretty good. Well, here's what Dree had to say about his big splash play.
Yeah, it was just a little screen to the left.
It looked like you might have scored on that.
Yeah, I know I should have, but I mean, everything happened for reason. You know, they played the defense well. You know, they had a great angle. You know, they had made a great stop.
Did you show yourself anything tonight in terms of how your game will translate to the NFL?
No, I showed that I can play in the NFL.
All right, Labs, you kind of already touched on it because that's where the conversation was bringing to us next. Of course, the red zone failures by the Steelers, kind of like you said, that bad habit from last year already carrying over into game one of the preseason.
Yeah, you know, after the Dree Archer play, it's first and 10 at the Giants 14. And then, as we mentioned, LeGarrette Blount carries for 5 yards on first down. You have second and 5 at the 9-yard line. It's a very good situation to be in. LeGarrette Blount carries again for 2 yards, 3rd and 3 again. Not a situation where it's a long yardage. I think the offense still kind of has the advantage in terms of the down and distance. You know, I didn't quite understand the play that was called then, or maybe it wasn't the play that was called, what the coverage, Ben might have thought the coverage dictated or whatever, but it just seemed to me that, you know, an attempted fade pattern to Lance Moore, I don't know, that's not his thing. He's not that big. And so, you know, you end up kicking a field goal instead of scoring a touchdown. And again, especially when it's early in a game, you know, an offense that takes the ball, again, the way it started with the Steelers defense, three and out, okay? The Giants punt. The Steelers move the ball right down the field. You have a big play with your rookie. If you're able to score a touchdown there, you know, I think the advantage or the impact is more than just the points that you score. It's a big lift to your team on both sides of the ball. I think it's a little bit of a dagger to the Giants because they've been having problems offensively with the change they made at coordinator. You know, they're down 7-0. You know, they're just kind of bleh. So it didn't happen, though, and that's one of the things about red zone. 0-for-2 the Steelers were against the Giants. Got to take advantage of your scoring opportunities. You just do.
Yeah, there's the ball again that they could not hook up on Ben Roethlisberger to Lance Moore. Lance Moore was a pretty effective red zone guy in New Orleans. I'm not sure if it was necessarily on that play that we saw. But another thing that I think is going to be very interesting to see develop as this preseason continues. There you see Matt Spaeth, Bruce Gradkowski missed him. But the tight ends down in the red area, and there are a couple of guys vying for a roster spot at wide receiver, at the quote-unquote big wide receiver spot, Martavis Bryant, Justin Brown. You can maybe even throw Derek Moy into that group in terms of the big guy that can get it done down in that area. And it'll be interesting to me at least to see how those guys develop, if they can earn some more opportunities. And maybe by the third or fourth preseason game, maybe you see a whole different approach down there. They do have some different options. And let's look at it statistically. If Gradkowski hits Matt Spaeth, they're 1-for-2 scoring touchdowns in the red zone, and that's a lot better, right?
Yeah, but he didn't.
Kind of overthrew him, just a little bit.
But the potential is there.
Correct.
Something to build
Your
on.
Math is correct on that one.
50%, 1 out of 2?
That's what my math says.
Yeah,
Sutton's gotten 2 right today. 3 out of 4 with the players and touches on the first 4 plays, and now that.
Mark it down.
I'm on a roll.
All right. Well,
what else we got?
What's 2 for 14 on third downs?
Not good enough.
Let's talk about that going from the red zone to the third downs. And you already mentioned Martavis Bryant, that tall rookie that I think everybody was looking forward to see what he could do, how he would do with Ben and the other quarterbacks.
14%.
You cheated.
Yes, I did. But I got it done.
Well, you know, the third down failures. 2 for 14 on third down, 14%. You know, it prevents the offense from sustaining, you know, any kind of possession, movement, developing any rhythm, those kind of things. I mean, 2 for 14 on third downs is, I don't know that you can win many games playing like that unless the other team's giving you the ball. So, you know, again, it's the preseason opener, and a lot of times, you know, third down conversions, red zone conversions, those are the kind of things that, you know, you're looking for high efficiency in terms of execution. And maybe, you know, as even Mike Tomlin said in his final news conference before the team left for Northern New Jersey, he wasn't expecting, you know, mistake-free football or perfect execution. And so maybe all of this kind of comes together as a perfect storm and ruins a preseason opener. But, you know, when we're looking at this game, I don't think you can just explain it away or make an excuse, oh, it's the preseason opener, it'll be better next week. I don't think you can just say that. Maybe it is better, but I think that's only after some hard work and some better performances.
And the third down thing's particularly critical, Labs, because not only do you keep the ball, but the Steelers have all these weapons that they're excited about and all these different options. And as Le'Veon Bell put it after the game, power guys, speed guys, guys that make plays in the catching game, all kind of options available to Ben Roethlisberger. If you're getting 3 and out, you're not going to have enough downs to get to all your options, and you're going to not get out of what these guys, what you think you can get out of them. So, yeah, I think moving the sticks, that would be job one for me next week. If the goal coming into this first preseason game was play hard, fast, and smart, my goal, at least for game two, would be much better on third down, possess the ball, run more plays, and see where that takes you.
Yeah, no, and to be fair, I mean, you know, Ben Roethlisberger, when he was on the field, there was only one, I think they only had one third down because the first two Le'Veon Bell runs were good for a first down, then the big play to Dre Archer, and then you had the three plays in the red zone. So there was only one third down in Ben's only offensive possession. So it's not like the first team offense was pathetic on third downs. It really only had one opportunity. But yeah, Mike, you're absolutely right about that. What you need to do is be more efficient in the situations that ultimately define the outcome of a game. Third downs is one of them.
Well, then even going into the second half, Lab, sticking with offense, I mean, there was not a lot of production coming out pretty much at all.
No, I mean, you look at the Steelers' offense in the second half, I think it managed 80 yards total offense. And, you know, at that point of the game, the Steelers, they're playing the down the depth chart guys, but so are the Giants. So it's not as though, you know, Landry Jones and the people that he was playing with were in against the Giants' first-team defense, and that's why they were unable to move the ball. I mean, they're playing against the comparable guys on the Giants' depth chart, and to me, the inability to really muster any kind of offense at all until that last gasp drive that ended in the turnover, you know, again, it's another thing that's just not good enough.
Yeah, they had the early opportunity when they recovered the muffed punt.
Yes.
And had to settle for a field goal, four-play, one-yard scoring drive. And then at the end of the game, the offense moving the ball down the field, potentially in position to steal that one at the end. And Martavis Bryant did what you can't do if you're a rookie receiver. He caught the ball, and then he fumbled it away after he had achieved a first down inside the Giants' 30-yard line. And that is the kind of stuff that makes it very difficult to establish confidence between a quarterback and a young receiver and between a coaching staff and a young receiver. Martavis Bryant has showed promise ever since he got here, but he's been inconsistent, and that has continued. A week ago, Saturday, he lit it up out here at St. Vincent. He was Pro Bowl caliber in practice, really displaying hands, body position, feel, awareness, and ability to set defensive backs up and then make moves on them. And then it kind of leveled off a little bit. And I think you saw him draw a couple penalties Saturday night, get himself in a couple of good positions, but he didn't finish enough plays.
Well, you know, the thing with Martavis Bryant for me is that, you know, he is a rookie. He will be probably the fourth receiver at best if everyone else is healthy. So I'm not looking for him to do, you know, a whole lot except for in some situations, make some plays, you know, when given an opportunity. I don't, you know, Martavis Bryant, when it's all said and done, 15 to 20 catches this whole season, if he has a nice yards per carry, yards per reception average, I think that that's what he is looking like in terms of his rookie season. So I'm not so much, well, you can't do what Martavis Bryant did at the end of the game, which is fumble. That's a given. I will even agree with Mike Prisuta on that. But I just think that if fans or even this coaching staff is going in expecting Martavis Bryant to be, you know, a top three kind of production receiver on this team, I think that those expectations are a little too high.
Oh, I'd agree with it, but when opportunity knocks, he's got to deliver.
Yes.
As we're saying, maybe in the red area, if he becomes a guy they have confidence in, maybe those numbers go up a little bit because they find a way to get him some, what did they call it when they drafted him? Somebody said cheap touchdowns because he's 6'4".
Yeah, well,
they count 6'2", right?
Yes, they do.
I'm on a math roll today.
Three times. All right, let's move on to individual performers and kind of evaluate those guys. And I think it's a no-brainer. We're going to start with Howard Jones, guys. Kind of multiple splash plays, and for fans who did not know who he was, you did by the end of that game.
Yeah, you know, Howard Jones was in the right place at the right time. And I'm not saying that to be critical. You know, the two takeaways, you know, that he was a part of, and he was part of this tackle here on the opening kickoff. You know, it's not like he stripped this fumble out and, you know, recovered it himself. But, you know, he was in the right place at the right time. He did get himself on the football in kind of a group there. When he dove on it there, if he doesn't come up with it cleanly, there's a good chance that the Giants player there recovers it. On his touchdown, Vic Soto actually made the play by getting his hand on the ball and creating the situation that we see here. You know, Howard Jones just picked it up and was wise enough, savvy enough to know that the whistle had not blown. Maybe his teammates were helping him, whatever. But these are the kind of plays, you know, that the Steelers defense needs to make more often during this regular season. I don't know that Howard Jones is going to have a lot of opportunities to be making these kinds of plays in the regular season. But, you know, if he keeps doing this in August, he might get that shot.
Yeah, particularly he's a really interesting guy, not drafted, but what you would call a recruited walk-on by NFL standards. A lot of people wanted this guy after he wasn't drafted, and the Steelers went out and got him. The question is, can they keep him? He has not played anything resembling the type of linebacker he's being asked to play now, so he's doing totally new stuff. He didn't play special teams in college. That's totally new to him as well. And do you put him on the practice squad and hope he doesn't get scooped up by somebody? Do you keep him on the active roster because you know that down the road he has a chance to be a pretty good football player and try to find ways to use him in the meantime? It's going to be real interesting to me. That's one of the positions, Lab, that I think got a lot of competition for the last spot or two and a lot of viable candidates.
Yeah, you know, the thing about it is, you know, Howard Jones was a defensive lineman at Shepherd, played with his hand in the ground. And, you know, now he's trying to adjust not only to the NFL from Shepherd, which is not even the Big Ten, you know, one of those lesser Division I conferences, but he's also adjusting to a new position and playing, you know, upright. So Howard Jones, I think, has himself quite an adjustment ahead of him. You know, we'll see where that ends up. But I think if Howard Jones ends up on the 53-man roster, it will be because of special teams.
All right, let's move on to Mike Adams, guys, who we saw a lot throughout this game after Calvin Beecham left with the first-team offense. He was there, and he played more than any other player on Saturday. And what did you evaluate from that, Mike?
You know, my expertise on the offensive line is not what maybe some other people around here can bring to the table, but I talked to a couple of them and they were very excited about him. And I think you pointed out how many plays he played. I think they wanted to take a long look at him. We talked about Mike Adams, Craig Wolfley and I did on the pregame show prior to the game, and Wolf was saying he wanted to see basically more competitiveness out of Mike Adams, more here I am, I'm going to go out here and do what I have to do to take a job. I'm going to show you guys I can play. I'm going to show you guys I belong on this team. He's another guy that's had what I would characterize as an uneven camp, little up, little down. That was a big step forward, I thought, based on how much he played and the reviews I got thereafter.
Yeah, he played, just to put numbers to it, since you know you're in the kind of math mood, 51 plays on offense, 78% of the offensive snaps. And you know, the book on Mike Adams was good against the run, or good with the run, good run blocker. The thing that where he had problems, and it was really illustrated in London, was in pass protection. But when we were watching those highlights there, Mike Adams held his own very well in pass protection against the Giants. And he played left tackle again, as Missy mentioned. As soon as the first group was taken out, the second group went in, and Mike Adams played all the offensive snaps at left tackle from that point on. So not only was he asked to play a lot, but when you're going in your first outing, playing that much, fatigue also becomes a factor. And I think that one of the things coaches want to see from Mike Adams and others is how they react to fatigue. Does their technique go by the wayside? Do they become less fundamentally sound when they get tired? Do they start reaching and grabbing and committing penalties? Those kind of things. Mike Adams really held his own again in pass protection, which I think was the area that the Steelers were most interested to see him improve. And, you know, again, I don't know that he's pressing for a starting job at this point, but I think that after this game, Mike Munchak, Mike Tomlin, Todd Haley, I think they feel much better about their number three offensive tackle.
All right, guys, another person who stood out, Jordan Dangerfield. He had six tackles, four on defense, two on special teams, but good to see one of those guys that's kind of stuck in that mix where are you going to make the team or are you not?
Yeah, and Jordan Dangerfield, again, I really think his future, his immediate future with the Pittsburgh Steelers on the 53-man roster would be special teams. I think that, you know, when you look at him as a defensive back, he's more of an in-the-box kind of safety, not real nifty in coverage in terms of being able to match him up on people. I don't know that he covers a lot of ground or has exceptional ball skills, but he will hit you. And I think that when he hits you, it would hurt. I'm hoping never to experience that personally, but I've seen how some of the people he has hit have reacted to that, and it didn't seem to be a real pleasant experience. But guys, again, we talk about this all the time. Find the guy with the ball, get the guy with the ball on the ground. Jordan Dangerfield did that pretty well.
Yeah, that goal line play we just saw, it's an example of what he's been doing out here. There's been a big hit by number 42 pretty much every day in training camp. And if he can keep translating that stuff into games, he's going to make it very difficult for the Steelers to decide not to keep him. And that's another position, defensive back. Looks like a lot of viable candidates, like linebacker, maybe like defensive line, where they're going to have some tough decisions to make. And it's up to these players to make it as tough as possible on the decision makers. I do think at this point we can say this much about Jordan Dangerfield. He is deserving of a little respect.
When you look at the safeties.
You knew that was coming,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I did. When you look at the safeties, I mean, I cannot imagine a realistic scenario in which the Steelers keep more than five safeties. And what you have are Troy Polamalu, Mike Mitchell, Shamarco Thomas, Will Allen, and Robert Golden, who was one of the leading tacklers on special teams each of his 2 years with this team. And that's why I said, you know, Jordan Dangerfield, if he is going to be able to win a spot, I would imagine it would be Robert Golden's spot, and that would mean he would be a better special teams player than Robert Golden. That's kind of a steep mountain to climb right now, but Jordan Dangerfield has some time, and you know, again, he's off to a pretty good start.
All right, Jarvis Jones, guys, only had one sack last year during his rookie season, but a sack for 8 yards loss on Saturday.
And beyond that, I talked to linebackers coach Keith Butler about Jarvis today, and Keith liked the rest of what he saw on the video. Keith's not a big splash play guy, believe it or not. He wants these guys playing within the scheme of the defense and not trying to force the issue to get sacks or get turnovers. Keith Butler believes that's where breakdowns occur. What he wants is for players such as Jarvis Jones to understand the defense well enough to play at a high tempo and to trust the guys around them enough that you don't have to force the issue. If you play with patience, according to Butler, and you're a good player, and they think Jarvis Jones is a good player, eventually the big plays will come to you. The Steelers really trust their scheme. They think it works. They think if you do what you're supposed to do, eventually the ball's going to come to you. The chance to make a big, impactful play is going to come to you. But they think all the plays are impactful as long as everybody's doing their job and the offense is getting stopped. Jarvis Jones, Butler said, is on a par with Lawrence Timmons in terms of where Timmons was going into his second year. They think that's where Jarvis Jones is. So they're not doing jumping jacks, but they're pleased.
That's good to hear. Well, I know we talked a lot on Thursday's show previewing this game on Saturday about Sean Spence, but guys, he did in real action on Saturday. We got to see it. We've been kind of waiting for this moment, a major milestone that he downplayed, but he admitted after the game that he was a little emotional when he put the jersey on. He was out on the field.
Yeah, and he acquitted himself well. I mean, because Ryan Shazier did not start, Sean Spence did. Had three tackles, played special teams. You know, again, Sean Spence is it's almost as though the knee injury never happened. I mean, he has shown absolutely no ill effects of that. He has not missed a practice. He was out there again today. The knee apparently has not given him any problems when he stresses it, either in, you know, practice or in a game. And, you know, things are going very, very smoothly for him. I'm happy for him. He has worked extremely hard to get himself back into this position. And, again, a lot of people watching training camp practices out here were mentioning how Vince Williams was looking very good, and was he pushing Ryan Shazier for a starting job. I would think that if Ryan Shazier is not starting for the Steelers on September the 7th against the Cleveland Browns, it would be Sean Spence at that spot, not Vince Williams.
Yeah, and if not that, Labs, your beloved special teams, there's another guy that can really contribute in that area. I think it would behoove the Steelers if Sean Swisham was not in the top eight special teams tacklers this year as he was a year ago. And I think with Sean Spence back, there's a pretty good chance that's not going to happen again. Tremendous story. I just on a personal note, I thought it was so cool to see him out there starting the game. Not that you'd want anything to happen to Ryan Shazier, but the road that he has traveled and how much work he's put into it. I know it's just the first preseason game, and nobody's going to remember it in September, but I bet Sean Spence is going to remember it. And I'll tell you what, guys, I'm going to remember it too. That was pretty neat stuff.
Yeah, it was. And I would just like to say that, you know, there are other teams and other head coaches who would not have invested two full years with this guy waiting for the possibility that maybe he could come back and play and contribute. Kudos to the Steelers and to Mike Tomlin for believing in him, believing in the possibility of this comeback, and then giving Sean Spence the time that it was going to need, not getting impatient, you know, sticking with him. And I think that this guy, again, he was Ryan Shazier before the Steelers had Ryan Shazier, that inside linebacker who can run a little bit.
All right, let's go down to the field to Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin for his post-practice press conference.
Teresa, I missed the days when you were smart. Good afternoon's work for us today. I like the energy that the group came back out with. It's important that we move on from our last performance to prepare for the next one. It's a big improvement week for us individually and collectively. I thought it was a good start in that regard today. We got some guys working themselves back into participation in different forms of fashion. Shazier worked today in a limited capacity. We had some guys that had some bumps and bruises from the game we wanted to take care of. Nothing major. Matt Spaeth, Mike Mitchell. But again, we expect those guys to be back out here tomorrow. Mike Palmer's dealing with an ankle. Justin Brown was limited today. He's got a little thumb injury. We'll monitor those guys. But overall, from a health standpoint, we're doing pretty good. And we need to, because we need to put a good exclamation point on the remaining work here in Latrobe. Any questions?
You talk about the remaining work in Latrobe. We have the Bills this week. What kind of different nuances is that going to help?
You know, I just think we need to put these guys in as many challenging situations, uncomfortable situations as we can. And obviously working against an unfamiliar opponent and an unfamiliar scheme in a lot of instances in a practice setting, I just think raises the level of urgency. We'll get an opportunity to learn more about these guys. And that's what it's about. We want to put them in as many positions as we can to evaluate them and give them an opportunity to show what they're capable of.
It'll be good for the offense to go against a 4-3 defense in practice.
Yeah, it'll be great for our defense to go against a mobile quarterback and some of the things that they're doing offensively. They're a good dance partner for us, if you will, because they do a lot of things a little bit differently than we do. So it'll be great to get in a practice situation and us to hone our skills against some of those things. And I'm sure they feel the same way about some of the things that we do schematically that's going to be helpful to them.
Like, what were your thoughts after reviewing tape of the game? Anything that looked better than you initially thought or worse?
Not really. I had a pretty good ringside seat for it the other night. Again, like I said after the game, a lot of positives, a lot of negatives, things to build upon and get better. And I'm more concerned about how we do that and what our next tape looks like. I think we got a legitimate opportunity for guys to take a significant step between game one and game two. But that's nothing new. That's always the case.
Has that kind of always been the real separation takes
place? It is. If you're going to make a move, it's going to happen. There are no new surprises, speed of the game, environmental things, and so forth. Somebody's going to make a substantial move. It's going to happen this week.
Mike, last week I asked you about the remaining time in training camp and your challenge, and you said not enough time. As of today, you have even less time. What's your number one concern with the time that you do have remaining?
I'm not concerned about it in terms of watching sand creep out of an hourglass. I'm just trying to make the most of the moments. I want to feel the same urgency of the moments that I ask the guys to feel. What's most important is that we have a good, productive day today. And I think we did. We got some more meetings and things to do tonight. I try to feel the urgencies of the moment as opposed to just sitting around lamenting about the lack of time.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
All right, Coach Tomlin wrapping up his press conference after practice. And we didn't really talk about practice because there was so much to get to with the first preseason game, guys. But as he did mention, Ryan Shazier did return to practice today, but it wasn't a limited capacity. He wasn't really doing much with team drills.
No, he didn't do anything with team drills. He did participate in some of the individual things. He was out there hitting the sleds with all of the other linebackers. But once they went into 11-on-11, it was Sean Spence again back with the first team next to Lawrence Timmons.
And Mike Mitchell, you saw him there just in a T-shirt. He did not practice along with Matt Spaeth and Coach Tomlin, saying just some bumps and bruises from Saturday's game, should be back tomorrow. Also returning to practice to note, Darius Hayward-Bey was back. He's been battling that concussion. Same with Steve McClendon.
Yeah, the other thing about this practice, this was the first one of this training camp with no live tackling since the pads went on. I don't know. I would imagine that was a little bit of a concession that Mike Tomlin made, that this team had just played a game. Maybe it was a little bit of that, plus the fact that the fields were a little moist. But there was no tackling today.
Ramon Foster back at it as well today. He got poked in the eye and left the game Saturday night. He had a big bandage on his eye when the team left North Jersey, but good to see him back. I saw he had a pair of glasses on at lunch, and he had a shield over his helmet to protect his eye, but looked like kind of professorial.
Professorial.
Thank you. You looked like that, too.
Stick to math, Pursuta.
looked like an educated young man at lunch tonight, even though he was wearing a Tennessee shirt.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us here today on Steelers.com Live, presented by Xbox One. For Bob and Mike, I miss you. We'll see you tomorrow at 5 p.m.